Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Vault dwellers and wastelanders, welcome. I almost said waste dwellers and vaultlanders. That's weird. Hey, welcome. This is a very different kind of episode of what we've been doing lately, because it is time to talk with our patrons. It's the end of the month, and this time I'm here because I'm not on vacation. And thank you all for filling in for me while I was gone. That was super fun. It sounds like you guys had a great time, but I miss you all, and I'm so happy to be able to talk with you about episode 7 of season 2. We are getting so close to the end. Episode 7 was a real banger. Lots of stuff to go over, some really cool stuff, and I can't wait to get all of your thoughts and impressions and predictions for what happens in the final episode of the season. It is coming to a head. This is going to be amazing. And welcome back to all of you here. I'm going to call out all your names. You're going to unmute yourselves, and you're going to make either the sound of Maximus's NCR power armor or the Death Claw during the fight. And it'll sound like the fight. It's perfect. There's no way this will not sound exactly what happened on the screen. Here we go. Welcome back to Nova and Lil Green and Pumpkin King and Void and Ira and Ash and Adam's Child. Everybody, so glad to have you here. Get ready to unmute on the count of three. 1, 2, 3. Yes, you guys should do Foley work for the TV show. That was amazing. I'm so excited to go through this episode with you guys. There's so much to talk about. But for those of you who are listening and part of the live Twitch stream audience, thanks for being here. We're going to be going through each of the different scenes, and it's going to be kind of similar to the way I break it down solo, as I've been doing for the last so many episodes. But the patrons are going to chime in with some of their thoughts, and we're going to talk through some of these different points, and then we're going to try to figure out where things are going to wrap up. So let's get into it. First, this episode kicks off, and we finally get some background for Steph. We know that she's been kind of this ice queen, and she's like brutal in Vault 32, ruling with an iron fist and all of that. But then we find out that she's actually had a rough background. Not only is she Canadian, but she had to cross the border during the resource wars, and her mother died. She had to do some terrible things. And she, in fact, this scene opens up really, really intensely. She takes out some people. What do you all, let's just open this up. Who would like to start this off and talk about Steph in the opening scene? Pumpkin?
Finally, Canadian lore.
Canadian lore. Yes, yes.
That's what I picked up in this entire episode. I was like, Canadian lore.
Canadian lore. I think one of the things this scene does is really show how difficult and dangerous things were, and how much things were really falling apart before the bombs dropped. The fact that Canadians were being put into camps and were being controlled, and she was this desperate to get over the border and then pretend to be an American to become part of Vault-Tec and all of that. Any thoughts about this scene, about like the murder that she does, Ash?
I like the quote that her mother says, don't think of them as human beings, think of them as Americans.
Right, yeah.
Like, oof, that's kind of raw.
Yeah, it plays into the tribalism that we see across the show in the games, where people identify with a specific group and then everyone else is on the outside of the group, and so therefore they're treated not like humans anymore, which is very much a real thing that happens to humans, especially during wartime. I mean, wartime propaganda often paints the adversaries as animals or things like that. Or during slavery, slaves were treated and called animal names in order to make it easier to not have to think of them as people, which is super dark, but clearly you see it represented here in this episode. Anyone else have thoughts on this opening scene before we move on? Because there's a lot of stuff to get to. Adam's Child, what do you think?
I just wanted to comment on how well done the eye effect for her eye socket was. Like, I thought that was so gruesome and amazingly well done, and I really hope it was practical.
Yeah, well, it's probably a combination. A lot of the effects, so like, for example, the Death Claws are practical, but they're also computer touched up. They're generated. There's some of the scenes, they're fully computer generated, but in some of them, they are guys in these practical suits that are like 9 feet tall.
and you can see the seams in them in the back behind the scenes footage. And so that stuff is kind of edited out and cleaned up using post-production computer work and that kind of thing. So it's a combination. So I would guess it was probably a combination of really good makeup and then a little bit of touch up on the back end, which usually creates the best results. Well, here, let's move on. We get that scene. She crosses the border and has to murder a person. And it's juxtaposed with her like going through this like PTSD thing of remembering this moment, brushing her teeth and the blood that comes out of her mouth, as sometimes happens when you brush your teeth. And then we get the scene with Lucy and Hank, and we see that she's starting to be a little bit more open to Hank's perspective on things. And in the pre-show, I talked about how we want to go through each episode, each kind of scene by scene. So let's talk about this in general, this specific scene. And then as we get through the episode, we'll talk a little bit more about like what's actually going on here. But who would like to talk about Lucy and Hank in this scene? Anybody have any thoughts? Nova?
Yeah, I just have just one quick question. In the previous scene, I just wanted to bring something up. It kind of breaks the lore or rewrites some of the lore. Can we talk about that later?
Sure. I mean, you can point it out now because if it's about that specific scene, sure.
Well, because in the fall timeline, it was not until 2076 is when America actually annexed Canada, but it was implied that this scene took place many, many, many years. Well, not really many years, but a few years before the actual time, the pre-war timeline.
Okay, I didn't catch that. What implied that it was earlier than that?
Well, because do you really think that she'd be able to make her way all the way down to Las Vegas and then get a job there and then become the high-ranking Voltech executive under Buds within that amount of time?
Well, if it's within a year, that could be possible. We also saw that a lot of the people in Buds group are a bunch of idiots and they're all kind of green, right?
I was going to bring that up later when we get to that scene.
But right, but I think that's like the counterpoint to, I mean, that's a good point, but also a lot can happen in a year. And on top of it, like the one girl who's one of Buds was hired a week before and she was in that list, like she was cryogenically frozen. So potentially maybe they were desperate for people to sign on because Bud was such an idiot that he was bad at selling the idea.
Maybe they were. We need to remember though, this scene also, like the scene of the Lucky 38 takes place after the meeting, and the meeting the meeting I assume had to take place at least 2 years before the actual Great War, because it gives each different company the individual vaults, and so they'd have to have a lot of time. They even have a lot of time to retrofit said vaults for the experiments that they were going to need. So I always assumed that it would have taken place at least 2 years before, and so that scene of them escaping would have taken place at least 3 years before, maybe 4 years before the Great War.
Right.
At least that's just what I'm thinking, and so that just pushes the timeline of America annexing Canada up a couple of years.
Right. But well, it's a lot of a speculation, right? Like, because we don't actually have hard dates on a lot of that stuff. So, I mean, you could be right. Also, maybe there was other stuff going on, or maybe, and a lot of, and this is the thing that happens in TV shows, is oftentimes these little holes are filled with other justifications. Like, maybe she was able to, like, the situation where she helps Hank out because Cooper wants to get rid of Hank in that situation, mm-hmm. right? Maybe that connection. Maybe she, I don't know, seduces him. And I mean, I know that's kind of cringy, but my guess is that there could be methods with which she used in order to get in his good graces. Maybe she acted like his savior, like, oh, I saved your life. And then he was like, oh, and then that created a bond between them. And then he was able to get her the position that she needed. And that only took a month or two, you know, like.
This is something this is something I just saw and I wanted to air out to get other perspectives on, because it kind of, well, just looking at it, I was like, this makes it seem a little bit weirder, and it was like in my mind I was trying to justify like how it would actually fit into the timeline with everything that we saw.
Right
Anyway, so
these are all fair points.
This long enough, so
it's fine, and these are fair points, and I think the real answer is that it's a transition from a video game to a TV show, and so there are going to be breaks in the lore, and that's just going to happen because that's what happens. That's just kind of the way
that
is.
The only thing I can think of really was that maybe if the Alaskan pipeline ran near Uranium, which, by the way, the city's name was Uranium, which is very apt for...
Right.
Because it was called the Uranium City Detention Center, Detention Facility Detention Center. like you can see a sign in the background as Steph is running down the hill called Uranium City Detention Center. And so I just thought it was very apt, and they chose that specifically. But it's like the only thing I can really think of is maybe that they, the Alaskan pipeline was running nearby that, and then they were just, and Canadians inside the city was causing a lot of problems trying to sabotage the pipeline because there was something inside the Bible that said that Canadian saboteurs were trying to sabotage the Alaskan pipeline. So America was increasing its military presence.
Yeah, that could totally make sense.
Uranium City Internment Camp. Yeah, that's the only thing I can really think of. Maybe that would fit into the timeline. But let's move on to the scene of Hank and
Sure. Lucy. Yeah, these are all interesting points. And my sense of all of that is that you're never going to make sure that everything fits tightly together like a puzzle piece. Is that there's always going to be things that just kind of don't fit 100% because things are written by different people and they're made for different platforms. And, you know, it's just kind of the way it is. But it's always interesting to try to see if it does fit. I think that's definitely a thing worth mentioning. Void?
I can make it fit really quickly.
Okay.
Sure.
Let's hear annexation is not something that just immediately happens. It's like what Russia was doing to Ukraine a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. They were trying to annex Ukraine, and it was just an all-out war zone, pretty much. It's not that it just happens overnight. It's basically you're fighting for that land, and then once you gain that land, that's the annexation.
That's a good point.
It could have been a time before it was actually annexed, but they were still fighting for it.
Yeah, but I was just saying that like having an American detention facility in Canada, literally an entire city in Canada, kind of seems like that has already been completely annexed, is what I was trying to say. But that could be the
point. Possibly. Or it's a military base and they've captured people and they're pushing into the land, but they haven't fully annexed it yet. So you don't have a final date on that.
Because Uranium City is at the very northern tip of Saskatchewan. I just looked it up. And Saskatchewan goes about like halfway up Canada, pretty much. Yeah. Above that is the Northern Territories, I think. So that's very, very, very far north, which, you know, Canada being most of population along the southern border would make it fairly easy, but still it's a fairly inland city to capture and hold for. And
it's all just fuzzy speculation,
uranium,
right?
Like, it is named uranium. They were mining uranium there, and they just took over the mines specifically for the war effort.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, there could be a lot of reasons that these things do work out. And but yeah, I think these are all interesting points. But let's move on because we've got more stuff to cover. And also, welcome to Remy. Welcome. Joined in a little bit late, but glad that you're here. And let's move on to Lucy and Hank. And it looks like Lucy's starting to be convinced a bit by Hank's argument. She's starting to ask questions and things. Adam Straub, what do you think about this scene?
I watched that scene and I looked at Hank start to kind of, I want to say he kind of started tricking himself in his effort to try and convince her that what he's doing is right, because you could see that he was trying to continue to manipulate her and show her all the things that she missed in the vault and all that stuff. And then he gets the moment to teach her how to drive.
Right.
And I actually see him like start to creep into his fatherly, father-daughter bonding thing.
Right.
And you feel for a moment that they're actually connecting. And I thought that was good. And I like how he's trying to build on the previous episode where he was trying to convince her about this plan, that it's bad in her eyes, but in his eyes, it's the lesser evil.
Right, right. Yeah. That seems to be his justification here. Ira had some thoughts too. What'd you think, Ira?
When you can see that Lucy's thinking that, well, maybe this is actually like it's making sense in a way, it made me think like when you're playing the games, and especially for the first times, you don't know, like you're getting to know the factions and like you're kind of playing on everybody's side, maybe, and like choosing that was kind of the same that, okay, I don't really know what to decide.
Right, she's like feeling it out. It seemed like she was actually giving him a shot. Like, okay, tell me more about this. Yeah.
That's what made me think of the games and that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's interesting because it seems like his fatherness, if that's a word, is authentic, that he genuinely still seems to care about her. And in the previous episode, we saw him doing the thing where he didn't push back. He just was like, okay, if that's what we're doing, that's what we're doing. And that was his form of manipulation against her. And then you get the scene where they're going on the golf cart and she's like, what is a golf cart? Which is, of course, hilarious. And then they get down to, you know, the guy mopping the floor, who was previously this legionary who was going to murder everybody. And now he's just like docile and like, oh, don't slip on the floor, I just mopped, you know, that sort of stuff. Ash, what did you think?
I think that Hank really kind of started screwing himself over when he told her that perfect is the enemy of good, because she's looking around at this like perfect, quote unquote, like vault that he has created, but it's not good. It's not, because he's, you know, kidnapped these people. He's mind controlled them. It's not something somebody would necessarily deem as good.
Yeah. It was his analogy was, you're trying to shoot for perfect, but really we just need to do good enough. But you're right. This still isn't good. Like, you could see her process that, like, okay.
Nova? I have something to add on to Ash's statement was she really solidified her, Lucy really solidified her opinion that what her dad was doing was not the right decision when she was talking to the former ranger. Because she had seen what the NCR had done. She had talked to Maximus and everyone else from Vault 4 who were former NCR citizens. And they were telling her about how, like, the NCR was not perfect, but it was good. It was far better than the state that that Southern California is in right now, as a result of what her dad was doing. And so she was thinking probably along the lines of, okay, well, my dad ruined something that was already really good, nearing on as perfect as the Wasteland can be, so then he can implement his own good society that is less than perfect.
Right.
But because, and so who's going to say that he's not going to ruin this as well? So that's what I took away was.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, is that, like, by his own argument, isn't the NCR good? It's not perfect, but at least it's good enough. It's better than what else is out there. And yeah, I mean,
it doesn't come along with forcing people into slavery. It comes along with actually fighting against slavery and relieving people from slavery and oppression and actually uplifting them in a natural way,
right,
rather than it being forced upon them.
Yeah.
By a device.
Yeah. And even though there might be bad people in the NCR, there are still people who are good people who have at least the freedom with which to try to forward those agendas, like better agendas. So, yeah, it's not perfect, but at least there were good people there.
Yep.
Yeah, no, great point. I think that's really solid. All right, let's move on. We've got we have the whole thing with Thaddeus and Maximus and the ghoul, and they're marching into this now abandoned NCR site in order to, you know, find a bunch of weapons in order to fight the Deathclaws. And the ghoul knows that Maximus has the cold fusion on him, and this is leading into the stuff that's about to happen. So we don't have to spend too much time on this specific scene. But Thaddeus is trying to connect with him as like, oh, we're just two ghouls, aren't we? And it's becoming more and more clear. He's not turning into a ghoul. This is not ghoul stuff, but we'll continue with that as we move forward. Let's jump into, because I feel like we can summarize all of this once they actually get to the weapons and the power armor. But the next scene, we have the behind the scenes stuff of, well, it's not behind the scenes, it's like the when Steph was working at the casino and she's talking to Cooper, and Cooper's getting rid of the body and all of that. So we come to find out that, like, there's that connection there as well. What did you guys think about that? This came up a little bit already, but any other thoughts on this one? Any thoughts? Anybody chiming in? No? Nothing to add about this one? We can keep moving because we kind of covered that a little bit already. And then we get to Cooper sitting down with the rep. And I think this is another one of those big topics, and it might be worth just discussing the whole situation going on here. Because do you think that she, and this is one of the big questions the internet has, is she Enclave? Is she playing dumb? Is she manipulating him? Or is she genuine when she's like, hey, if you can get something and we can give it to the president, that's a good person and this is the right thing to do. I saw Adam's child hand first. We'll do you and then we'll jump to Ira. What do you think?
I think she is 100% Enclave, because this version of the Enclave, granted, we know how much industry affects politics, but this version of Enclave could be purists or patriotic purists, as in we don't need them if we're the only ones left standing. So they basically have a toxic idea that only the government should stand in power, is what I feel like it could be going towards.
Okay, then you think that she's been manipulative this whole time. She's been putting on this facade in order to get in Cooper's good graces to then capitalize on this moment.
I don't think it was actually a facade. She believes everything that she's saying.
Even though her beliefs were counter to Enclave agendas previously, when she was standing up for democracy and all of the things that...
Well, the Enclave is basically just the continuing of a superior government in their eyes. So claiming that it is proper democracy wouldn't necessarily be incorrect in their eyes.
Okay. What do you guys... Does anybody else have any thoughts on that? I'm not sure how I feel about that specific take. Pumpkin?
I think it's more of... She's manipulating him, but there's someone manipulating her.
Okay.
So it's kind of like she's fully believing that what she's doing, her view is correct, but there's somebody who up higher than her that's like, yeah, like agreeing with her, but you know.
Okay. So does she know that she's working for the Enclave?
Yeah, that's the whole thing, is she might not even know that she's working.
Okay. So you're taking the other side that she doesn't know if she's sure about that. So let's just break into this. I know this is jumping ahead, and I said we weren't going to do that, but we're changing the rules as we go, because this is a juicy topic. Later on, we find out that the big reveal at the end is that her brain is powering the mainframe that controls all the mind control devices. The reason and the assumption here, at least on my part, and feel free to jump in and correct me if I'm wrong about any of this, the assumption is that her mind is the one being used because she is pleasant and docile and all of these things. And those are traits that, as Hank described, were things that they wanted to insert into these people's minds so that they would become good citizens and good people. And so she is the template that is now causing that to be functional in all of these other individuals, because she's the mainframe, right? That seems to be what's implied here. If she was malicious, not so much that she didn't believe in what she was doing, but if she was malicious and working towards something darker, then wouldn't that trait also manifest in all the other people who are being controlled? And if it does, has it just not happened yet? Is that the way they're going to rebel against Hank? Are they all just pretending to comply until the right time where they will push back and do the thing? Kind of like she was pretending to be one of the good guys, potentially, until the moment where she's able to capitalize on that. Any thoughts on that? Because I feel like those two things have to be kind of justified in some way. Adam Child, what do you think?
I just thought of something that's somewhat confusing to me. If she was the mainframe, how was House able to mind control those guys outside the bar?
Because she wasn't an element that was, she wasn't a part of that yet. They've been continuing to work on the tech, and maybe one of the things they realized, or even Hank realized later, I don't know when her head ended up there. But one of the things he realized later was that the technology was not working, which House realizes because he pops the guy's head. And so maybe she was the missing piece that made it work that we didn't see get implemented somehow. But that would imply, because her head doesn't look like it's ancient, that she was cryogenically frozen and part of that vault also, maybe. I don't know. There's a lot of missing pieces in this one, I think, when it comes to her. I think we're probably all on the same page that the president here is absolutely Enclave, right?
So, what you're saying is we needed an actual human element in the research.
Yeah, well, in the technology to actually control the other brains. Yeah. Pumpkin, what do you think?
My brain just kind of connected something. I don't, this is kind of just a theory.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, this is an open place for theories. Yeah, like none of us know the actual answer. So go ahead.
That end is that her head is slightly decayed. It's 200 years in the future. If it was put there
200 years ago, it would be a skeleton.
200 years ago, it would be a skull, just a skull.
Yeah. And it's not in a jar. It's not like a robo brain. So yeah.
I think it's got like, Hank was looking for someone that is like perfect society, and what he saw in said character was someone who saw like a perfect society in their mentality. So the mainframe is connected to her brain that's controlling all the other character, all those characters.
Right.
My brain hurts.
Yeah. And that's why it works, is because she's the right personality to implant into them. And if that's the case, then how could she be an Enclave member?
So yeah, that's what it was. Is like, I don't think she, like, that's why I have that. Like, my brain's like, I don't think she's an Enclave member, but I do believe at one point she was being controlled by the Enclave in a manipulative way instead of a mind control way, and she just ended up being a VIP, as they call them, that was in said Vault Tech vault that was down there.
Yeah, and maybe all representatives and Congress people were able to have access to vaults or something. Also, she and the president may have been of the same political party, and that's why she trusted him. We don't know what political party they are. We don't even know this president's name. There are presidents of the Enclave that show up in the games, but we don't know officially the name of the president who was in charge at that moment. So there's I have a lot of questions about this. So listeners, if you're listening, if you have some theories about this, I know the internet is, a lot of people I've seen posting on Reddit saying like, absolutely, she's Enclave. You might be right, but I don't know yet. I don't know if we can confirm that and really nail that down. So it's a curious thing. So if you guys have thoughts about this as we continue on, feel free to bring it back up. But here, let's move on. We've got the whole situation with going back to the ghoul and Maximus and Thaddeus. And the thing I like about this situation, not only do we see some cool weapons that show up in the other games, the Gauss rifle that the ghoul picks up is freaking amazing. We get to see him use it later on the Deathclaw. It takes out big chunks of the Deathclaw, which is super cool. But this moment, I thought this moment of Maximus seeing the NCR power armor was amazing, because that sums up his character perfectly. He was born in the NCR in Shady Sands to good parents. He remembers what good people are like. He wants to do the right thing. He wants to give Lucy the cold fusion because he believes she's a good person. But he also was raised by the Brotherhood as a warrior, as somebody who wears power armor and fights. And the combination of those two things coming together in the NCR power armor was just like icing on the cake. I was just like, oh, this is so good. How did you guys feel about that, Ash?
I mean, Max said it himself. You always end up where you started.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it was so his coming home moment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. Adam's child, you had thoughts?
I was just going to insert what the ghoul said. He said, never underestimate the power of brand recognition.
Yeah,
And that's one of the scenes where Maximus sees almost a younger version of himself looking up
at
the power armor.
Okay, so let's jump ahead a little bit, because they march in through Freeside, and the response is everybody follows them and cheers for them. Not only because they know that they're going to take on the Deathclaws, but they see the NCR power armor and they all have a very positive response to that. I thought that was interesting, because some people don't like the NCR, but it seems like this group of people who got kicked off the strip and or already lived in Freeside seem to have a very positive feeling about that. What are your thoughts? What do you think about that?
Well, I have something that I wanted to go back to the main scene.
Okay.
Where they were talking, looking at the power armor.
Sure, sure.
And it's Thaddeus is again trying to buddy with the ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, hey, is this normal?
The mouth on his neck. Yeah.
Down, and there's a mouth on his like collar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Collarbone. And the ghoul just gives him a look of no.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. His non-responses are wonderful. We'll get to Thaddeus in a little bit. We'll talk about that. Nova, did you have some thoughts about the marching in through Freeside scene?
Yeah. I was going to say, it feels like that probably just solidifies that NCR probably won the previous war.
The Battle of Hoover Dam.
Yeah, the second Battle of Hoover Dam I was looking for was the NCR Legion War. I think that they won that just purely because everyone reacts like, oh yeah, the NCR is back, woohoo, we're free. And then I was going to also add that I'm blanking actually on the second thought that I had. Sorry.
It's okay. If it comes back later, you can chime back in. You don't need to force it right now. But yeah, maybe that's the case. And that's the thing, is that like they've kept it very vague as to like, is there a canon ending or not? And maybe. And there's all these little hints that maybe that's the way that played out. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. All right, let's move along. We've got the scene. What, how do you all feel about Norm? What's going on with poor Norm? He keeps getting knocked out, and then the guys, the other Vault Tech people, are like, "Well, if it says it's okay to kill him in the manual," because the one guy just claimed that that was the case. I mean, clearly, this is a commentary on corporate workers who just comply and don't ask questions because they're just doing what they need to do to get by, and they don't really care. What do you think is going to happen with Norm here? Because he gets on the radio later. He tries to contact Lucy. We see that she's not near the radio in the special vault that she's in. But somebody else is going to hear that, right? Like, where is that going? And is it going to the same place that when Hank first got to that vault, he tried contacting somebody? My assumption it was House. But I'm starting to wonder if that was somebody in control of the Enclave or something like that. And my guess is both of those messages will have been heard by the same person or group, but I'm not 100% sure what that is. My sense is it's probably Enclave, but I don't really know. Any thoughts on this, Nova?
I honestly thought it was going to be Barb and the other old woman from that were downstairs that are from Philly that were going to save them. Honestly, because I feel like
they were going to save Norm. They're going to come to Norm's.
They're going to, because she has, like, even though she, what's her name? Not Barb, the old woman.
Yeah. What is her name? It's not coming to mind right now.
I feel like that she had, May June.
May June, right, yes.
Yeah, I feel like she does have a debt to pay to Lucy. And because Norm and her both sat down and were talking, that because Lucy took the scientist Wizzy onto Moldaver in the previous season, mm-hmm. that she probably feels like that she has it is in Lucy's debt for one reason or another, and so when they bring Norm downstairs or whatever, like they're gonna ambush, like she's just gonna be like, "What are you doing with him?" And so they're gonna hold at gunpoint and just free Norm.
I think you're onto something here. Or they're gonna unleash whatever they're saying it's rad roaches that are stuck in the elevator. Whatever's stuck in that elevator, and I think there is some evidence it might not just be rad roaches, it might be like a super mutant or something, maybe, I don't know, but maybe they unleash whatever's in the elevator in order to save Norm, and then that's how he gets out. I think you might be onto something.
Maybe.
Yeah. there's something there with May June and all of that.
Because they would not just bring back May June and Barb mm-hmm. just for a cameo, just to please the viewers, because they're honestly absolutely hilarious. Cassidy right. Norris might be a good guess. Because honestly, they were maybe, hilarious yeah. characters.
Right,
but I feel like they are going to play a bigger role in the next episode.
I also love the name Barv.
Barv.
yeah
he just mumbles the entire time.
Yeah, that's a good one, because I couldn't put I know, like, they're definitely not going to just kill Norm. He's too important for the plot. So how does he get out of it? I think you might be onto something. I think we might see something like this play out in the next episode. All right, you guys ready for talking more about Steph and Chet and the whole situation with Woody? Where did Woody go? The glasses are down the disposal. Chet finally grows a spine and stands up on his wedding day against her, and then tries to convince everyone there that, like, oh, she did something to Woody. And they're like, well, where's the evidence? And he's like, I put it back down the drain. And then he's like, oh, but I have this. She's a Canadian. And they're like, what, a Canadian? And they chase her into the room, and she has the box. So, what, here's my big question about all of that. What is she going to do, and what is in the box? What do you think about this? Now, I have some speculation. Adam's Child, what do you think?
So first off, I wanted to say that I loved the symbolism of him snapping the glasses, symbolizing that he has snapped.
Oh, interesting.
That's,
okay.
Yeah, that's when he
it is finally clicked for him.
Step up.
Yes. Yep. Right.
That's
like he's had too much. Boom. That's it.
Now, I think I know what's in the box. And I think I know why she wants it, because she wants revenge on America.
Right.
In my opinion, is what I think she wants. And who else had access to that box but Hank? Who's the only one who had access to the bomb that blew up Shady Sands? Hank. Mm-hmm. So I think there are launch codes in there or something to control the bombs. And I think her plan is to detonate them somewhere.
Interesting. Okay, so that's a theory. I hadn't thought about that. Anyone else have a theory about what's in the box? I've got ideas. I have ideas. I think it may be vials of FEV. That might be the secret, is that they've had it in the vault the whole time, and it's dependent on an overseer to then put it in the water supply or whatever. I think that could be a thing. Also, notice the box seems big enough to fit a head in, or a brain. That seems a little bit weird. It's big. Pumpkin, what do you think?
What is another box we've been seeing throughout this season? Chained to Hank's hand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The little injector remover thing.
Could this be a thing of cold fusion?
Like a backup cold fusion that was hidden in the vault?
Yeah.
Maybe. Whatever it is, it's valuable to Steph. And so if it's something that's valuable to her and she's seeking vengeance against America, then dropping a bunch of FEV in a vault full of Americans seems like a good way to get back at them a little bit. But it's something about this still doesn't click for me. It doesn't fully come together. I'm not convinced of any of these theories. So if any of you have any thoughts about that, feel free to chime in. If anything else clicks as we go, right? But we've clearly seen that Betty is not on the same page as Steph. That they are, even though they both worked for Vault-Tec, they are not on the same page and they are not working towards the same agenda, right? So there's probably something going on with that. Then we get back to Freeside. They do the whole march through the scene, through the city thing. And then we're back to Lucy in the vault. She finally puts the dress on. My sense of this is that is the moment where she decides to comply in order to start manipulating Hank back. And I love the sense that, like, she is her father's daughter, that she has learned so much from him, including how to now manipulate him in the same way that he's trying to manipulate her, right? This kind of goes both ways. Ira, did you have something you wanted to say about this?
Well, I had about the previous one.
Oh, sure.
In the
Freeside scene?
Oh, my gosh. What is her name?
Or Stephanie?
The overseer?
Stephanie
getting the box?
Yeah, Stephanie.
Did you notice the painting? No, the other.
Stephanie, when she goes in her office, there's a painting in the back and it's Todd Howard on a horse. Yes. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the secret safe she has in the wall is behind this big painting. And it's a painting that shows up. It's in one of the games, Fallout 3, maybe? I don't remember which game. Four? Is it four? Pumpkin says four. And it looks like Napoleon on the back of a horse, but it's Todd Howard. And it's an Easter egg in the game, which is now in the show. That's what you're bringing up?
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to keep up what we were talking about. I don't know if we went over that scene or not.
Oh, it was Betty. It was when Betty moved the picture. That's right.
Right, Betty. I didn't remember
yes.
her name.
Yes. Okay. I'm misremembering. I was thinking Stephanie was in office. Right. That makes sense.
That was just what I noticed.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me about that. That is awesome. That's a really cool point. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right, so let's jump ahead. So Lucy is now complying with Hank. She's wearing the dress and all of that. We have the scene where she then uncuffs his hand and then recuffs it. Did you guys expect that this was going to happen? This felt like a little bit of a surprise. Remy, you're nodding your head. You haven't a chance to chime in. What did you think?
Do you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. I felt like Lucy, she wants to believe her dad. She loves him. She cares about him. But she knows she doesn't agree with the things that he's been doing.
Right.
So I think most of this time she's been either trying to see things from his perspective or see a way to, you know, wrench control away from him. So I was fully expecting her to cuff him to the fridge, to the oven.
Mm-hmm.
That part didn't
surprise you.
Surprise me at all.
Okay, so you were expecting that she was now complying, like he had been complying before, in order to manipulate him, and then finally she was like, okay, I'm taking care of this, and she locks him down on the mm-hmm. on the oven. Yeah. So this is also the scene where he is trying to convince her of this false equivalency, which we brought up before, about the Legion and the NCR and how they're both wrong. And so they're both bad. And then she very clearly just succinctly points out that, like, one of them are murderers and rapists. The other are just kind of wrong sometimes, and yet they're the same. Like, that's not the same. That's not a problem. And I love that she pointed that out. Void, what did you think?
Sorry, I don't even know what scene we're on. We started talking about the rad roaches in the elevator shaft earlier, and it got me thinking about the teaser trailer.
Okay.
Where we saw the rad roach attack in the teaser trailer.
Uh-huh.
All of those are Vault 31 Vault suits.
Okay, so maybe we're right. So maybe Nova and I are onto something. Yeah.
Whether they break out or they're released onto them.
Yeah, something happens. It seems like something happens with them. Yep. That's cool. That's a fun point.
I'm pretty sure the rating call was just a misdirection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. All right. Any other thoughts about Lucy and Hank? Because it seems pretty clear that she was manipulating him and now has done what she's doing. Pumpkin?
So as somebody brought up earlier, she kind of made her final decision when it came to her, like for her decision, when the NCR ranger guy had come down, was giving them water, and she started asking him the questions. And I also fully believe that's where Lucy kind of made her final decision.
That's where it really clicked for her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any of those moments feel like they could have been like that moment. Yeah. I think you're right. All right, so let's talk about, I'm scrubbing through the episode a little bit. We've already talked about Chet finally standing up against Steph. And then we have the fight scene with Maximus and the ghoul and the death claws. But before that, poor Thaddeus loses his arm. When this happened, and I've totally expected that he's not turning into a ghoul. I predicted this last season. I'm like, this is FEV or something. He's going to become a super mutant or something worse. We've all talked about this before, that maybe he's turning into a centaur or something like that. And then his arm fell off, and my wife and I are watching this together, and I looked over at her and I was just like, what? And I was just like, that's so crazy. What did you think about this? Is he going to be a centaur? And does that make sense? Centaurs typically are crossbred between different creatures or people. What do you think, Pumpkin? There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you. To dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part? Comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transforms lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about the benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
So it could be a centaur. It could be anything that could be considered the term abomination.
An abomination of some abomination. Sort. Right. A herald. So, maybe it's another herald.
It's like, when you look at his arm fall down, it's very clearly that like that was like covered in necrosis where it detached.
Right.
So like there's clearly way more than because we saw the extra mouth that was on his shoulder,
right,
the arm falling off. I think he might be turning into a second person.
Yeah, there's something weird going on with him.
That was a terrible joke.
Well, if you look at the centaurs, their arms look like they fell off, and then they have all of these arms where their legs are supposed to be. And there's also in the lore, it talks a little bit how they're like maybe cross, like the DNA is crossed between humans and other creatures, like maybe dogs. But then you go back to the scene where, remember when he fixed his foot, when his foot was basically falling off, dog meat licks his foot. Do you remember this? And I can't take credit for this. Somebody online pointed this out. Dog meat licks his wounded foot. Then he gets the FEV from the chicken guy. Then he starts to mutate. Did some of dog meat's DNA get in his system? And that's part of what's causing him to turn into a centaur? That could be a thing, right? I mean, it seems a little crazy, but it kind of fits. What do you think, Pumpkin?
Well, I was just going to tell the joke that Remy said. The Remy put in the chat.
Oh, go ahead.
Didn't expect him to get disarmed like that.
Disarmed. So. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. There's some speculation there. I think maybe there might be something there going on. But then the fight scene with Maximus in the NCR power armor. This scene was so good because the first time we see him in power armor, he's terrible because he doesn't know how to use it. And then this season, we see him in power armor and he knows what he's doing. And now he's got NCR power armor with blades on his arms and he's like going toe to toe with the Death Claws. That was great. Any thoughts on this? I mean, I could go on for an entire episode about this scene, but I want to let you guys talk. Ash, what do you think?
Maximus is definitely a melee build.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I saw those blades and I was like, yeah, this dude's a melee build.
Yeah. Yeah. And the damage that he was doing to the Death Claws and eventually chopped one of their heads off. I was like, oh, that's so satisfying.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Yeah, very,
and
very
little,
cool.
Like, and Coop just like could not say anything. He just did the little like,
right. Thanks. Yeah. 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 The little cowboy nod, like touching his hat thing. Also, every time Cooper sees, every time the ghoul, we'll call him the ghoul because he's the ghoul here. Every time he sees a Death Claw, the look in his eyes, the sheer terror and the PTSD of that moment from the war, you can clearly see coming back. And he's just like, oh, dear God. And then, of course, he uses the gauze rifle and that worked out really well, and or at least it chipped away at the Death Claw and bought him at least a little bit of time for Maximus to chop his head off. And then Maximus gets pushed back through the gates, like it's tossed or hit through the gates, and then that it leaves that as a cliffhanger, right? Like, what's going to happen there? And I think, well, I don't know that we cover this yet. I think we cover this with the predictions for the next episode because it kind of leaves us on that. So any other thoughts on the fight before we move forward?
I love his reaction when he sits up, looks at the Death Claw, and it's just, oh no.
yeah. Lil Green, you had something you wanted to say?
I think definitely this scene solidifies Maximus getting his courage, honestly, mm-hmm. because he's going up against like not just one Death Claw, because after like the initial fight where when the ghoul gets into the Lucky 38, he turns around to fight two more.
Yeah.
And just goes right at it.
Right. So he doesn't go in the door and close the door and barricade it. No.
Like he's like we like when we first meet Maximus in season one, he's timid, he has no courage, he's just kind of a nothing person. Now we see him like going headlong into dangerous fights and standing for what he stands for. And so it's just like, it's nice to see his character become something, I guess.
Yeah.
And like, this really solidifies it. It's like, oh wow. Like he's really like found his stride and he's like running headfirst into it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And a lot of people have complained that this season has been a little bit light on Maximus and it's been more focused on the other characters, which I think it has, but I feel like this really starts to justify his taking a back seat a little bit. But if you think about the things that he's gone through, it really has pushed the plot forward. The conflict between the different Brotherhood groups, the getting the cold fusion and then meeting up with the ghoul and then defending the ghoul in order to allow the ghoul back into the casino, like all of that stuff, he plays a key role in, even if he hasn't been a part of as many of the scenes this season. So I feel like that works out pretty well. Ira, did you have anything else you wanted to add in?
Oh, I was just thinking that that is a long pause that the Death Claw takes when it sees them, because I'm just used to when a Death Claw sees you in the game, you're like, oh, I'm screwed, and it's going to attack immediately.
So. Right. And it's one of those translations from game to TV show, because you have to give the audience a chance to emotionally react to it. Yeah. That plays out
and
that way.
Tension, yeah.
And you have to build the tension and all that, of course. Then Cooper goes in and he goes right into I loved this scene playing out with the elevator opening up and Cooper coming into House's office, as we saw in the pre-war scene previously. But this time it's the ghoul and this time the office is in shambles because something happened here. And did you notice there's on the desk, there's a snow globe. And so for those of you in the audience who are watching the show but haven't played New Vegas, snow globes are littered throughout the map and you find them and you collect them. And I noticed on Reddit, the person who made the snow globe chimed in on Reddit and was like, oh my gosh, I've been waiting to talk about this for so long because I make the snow globes and the production company bought them from me for the show, but they were under NDA. They couldn't say anything about it. And here all of a sudden it shows up as this minor little Easter egg in a scene. I thought that was super cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
Did you say snow globes?
Yeah, the little snow, the little...
No. Like, as little, in there are multiple in the show?
I think there's two on the desk. There's one that's zoomed in on, I believe. I'll have to go back and look at that. But there are snow globes in the game.
I want to go back and watch
it. It was the Hoover Dam snow globe right next to the big button that opens up the door.
Yep.
Yeah, I was just, I'm watching it right now. It's the Hoover Dam one.
Yeah, it's right there. It's right there. So, okay. So we also, before we have this scene, and of course, Cooper hits the button and then House's face comes up on the machine, which we'll talk about. We also have the scene where, or I don't know if it was before or after this, but we have the scene where we see Cooper give his wife a kiss. And then he gets in the car with the president and hands over the stuff. Does this mean that they're on good terms again? It seems to imply that, unless she's playing him. But I don't know. I feel like, well, this could go either direction. What do you think, Nova?
Well, I think that they are in good terms because he would not have spent the last 200 and change years trying to find them if he did not still truly love and want them back. Because if he, like, even though they were divorced in the first episode, it does not really mean that he still doesn't love them, though, because maybe, like, in that time, because like I said, I'm pretty sure this takes place a few years in the past before the Great War happens. And so, so probably the time to reflect and come to a new state of mind, understanding of, like, the pressure that she was put under, the circumstances that they find. No, definitely not 2065.
Yeah, my guess, so some of you guys, let's not debate the year, because we all have evidence. Like, I think that this is probably very, very close to the mom's dropping, and that seems to be what the show is implying, but there are other arguments for the year. So let's not debate the year, because there's no hard evidence for that.
Yeah.
So it could go either way.
I'm just going to say I'm probably 2 years before the bomb's dropping. That's fine. I'm probably going to estimate.
And I don't know that we'll ever get a real confirmation about that either way. But I think the point is more of, like, did they make up? And she was like, okay, give this away. And then they were forced to get a divorce for public, like, to make things okay visually in the public for her to distance him, but they still love each other. And so they did that out of necessity. Or was she playing him? And then she was like, okay, now you get a divorce. Like, there's, it feels inconclusive to me. I think I personally side on the idea that she is doing the best she can in a difficult situation. And Cooper finally realized that by her cooperating and getting the cold fusion and giving to him, and then both of them agreeing that the right thing to do would be to give it to the president, and then her having to distance herself from him later due to those actions. Maybe the president, the government throws Cooper under the bus, calls him a communist, he gets fired, he has to distance from her so she can keep her job and still maintain her role at Vault-Tec. That's kind of my sense of it, but things could have gone the other way. Like, maybe she's playing him, maybe she doesn't have the best interests at heart.
Yeah, what I took away from it was that he does not fully trust her, but he trusts her more than he did actually going into Vegas with her. So he went to Vegas, obviously, simply just to get to Mr. House and figure out what was happening. And then whenever he got too drunk, lay on the bed, called her a monster, yada, 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 he was at the lowest point in the relationship, probably. And then her actually helping him recover the diode, which is what they call it. That's the cold fusion called the diode.
That's right.
Like, helping him recover the diode and actually handing it over to him to give to the president, then he probably did gain a lot of trust back with her. But it's probably like about a halfway point between where he, like, when they, like, at the beginning of the show, how he actually felt towards her versus what just happened before. So it's probably a halfway point where he's still built, like, trying to rebuild. They're trying to rebuild the trust back up with each other again. Mm-hmm. He is thankful because he sees that what she's under, that she is alluding towards the Enclave, and that the Enclave is watching her, and that the Enclave is pulling the strings of power behind the scenes where nobody can really see that. And so that's why he goes to the representative, and he is thinking, okay, my wife is actually helping me do the right thing. So maybe she is a good person after all. And then they probably did get a divorce later on like you said, purely just for public relations reasons, because
right
we're going to know, and somebody's going to rattle about the fact that some piece of technology was stolen. And then, well, guess who was the only person that went up to actually see Mr. House? And
They're going to have to throw him. She's going to have to throw him under the bus in order to save herself and her career.
Exactly.
And all of that. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
And that's why he is no longer a Volt Boy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Adam's job. You have some thoughts on this?
Yeah. So I 100% agree with you, Robots, on the reason why they're doing it and what the fallout pun intended, is going to be with them due to public relations reasons. And you can tell that he still loves her because throughout the entire series, he doesn't say, I'm looking for only my daughter.
Right. He says family.
I'm looking for my
family. Every time. Yes. Yes.
So I think the divorce was definitely for show, and it definitely would have not looked good on her if she were to have stayed with him, because she could have lost her spot in the company and the vault.
Right. Which wouldn't have been able, she wouldn't have been able to protect her daughter then. Yeah. Exactly. Which also means that she didn't plan for the bombs to drop when they did, as we see in the very first episode, because Cooper's with Janie. Right. And my guess is Cooper was able to get Janie back to a vault back to her mom, but because Cooper is now ostracized and seen as a communist, he was not let in. And that's why he had to stay out on the surface. That part all comes together for me. So
hold on. I do have a quick question about this though.
Sure.
Why doesn't Cooper know exactly which vault that they're in though?
Because he probably had to hand her off and then she was whisked away in a vehicle or a helicopter or something. And
Because he did say that he did look inside of executive vaults that were up in Oregon. Maybe that was the original plan, but they had to go with a backup plan going to the Las Vegas complex instead because they couldn't get to Oregon. Maybe
he went to Las Vegas first, but couldn't get in or couldn't even, he seems to not fully understand where the vault is. He just thinks there's one in Vegas. So maybe that was it. Yeah. He tried and couldn't find it. So he had to try others just to see if they were there. Pumpkin?
Yeah. I think we also need to point out who's playing the president.
Oh yeah.
It's Clancy Brown,
mm-hmm.
right? That's his last name. Yeah,
I think that's right. Yeah,
I was listening. That's the voice of Mr. Krabs,
right?
But apparently, he also was like, I want to say he did the voice of the president in one of the early Fallouts.
He's another one of those actors who's playing a role in the show as kind of this like guest character who has been in some of the games, which is definitely cool. All right. Well, I want to get to let's finish this. We kind of jumped ahead a little bit. Let's talk about Lucy opening up and finding the mainframe and the head, the representative's head as the mainframe. We talked about this a little bit. Any final thoughts about this? It seems in the previews that the head twitches. So the head is still alive, but it's not in a jar. Pumpkin, what do you think's going on with this?
Well, I want to specify the parallel that's happening, because it's happening at the same time that the ghoul is trying to get into the Lucky 38. It's happening side by side, so it's jumping from scene one time to them back and forth.
Right.
And it happens at the same time that the ghoul kind of powers everything up, but I will talk about that, because that's like the last bit of the episode.
Just go ahead. We're there, so go ahead.
Well, yeah, the ghoul turns on the Lucky 38 using the cold fusion, and Mr. House appears on the screen at the exact same time that Lucy opens the mainframe, finding the head on the table with tubes sticking out of it.
Right. Both reveals happening simultaneously. And with the device on her head that House put on his head in the flashback with Cooper in House's office.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's a lot of just parallels that happened here, like where it was the power on, where he's powering it on as she's opening the door, and they both have the same the quote unquote same discovery at the same time of, guess what, there's a giant head on the screen, and oh look, a head on the table.
Right. Now, do you think because she has the device that House had on his head, which seems to be the same device that he has on his messed up body, what's left of his body in New Vegas, that means that she is connected to House, or Vault Tech was connected to House, or House got a deal from Vault Tech in order to share that tech with them? I mean, it seems to imply something along those lines. And also, Rhombus was the other character that the president voiced. Thank you for that, Void. Any thoughts on this? I feel like this. There's something there. I feel like there's some sort, and I can't put this in words yet. This is one of those things that's going to dawn on me in a day or two when the episode is up, and I'm like, I'll have to talk about it next week. But there's some connection. Like, her role, is she Enclave? Is she not? Is she connected to House? Is she not? Why is she in a Vault-Tec vault if she's a representative? There's something going on there, right? There are pieces that we're missing of this equation and how it actually plays out. Or was she just taking manipulated by the Enclave the whole time, and they're 100% in cahoots with House and the Enclave, putting a very important Vault-Tec vault in New Vegas, which was House's backyard or underneath? Like, you see how this doesn't quite add up, because the Enclave and House and Vault-Tec aren't 100% cooperating with each other, even though they work together, and the Enclave is trying to pull each of their strings. Does that make sense? Am I saying this clearly? Adam's Child, am I just rambling? Is this nonsense?
I think your House rambling about a missing variable.
The missing variable. Well, the missing variable, I'm pretty sure, is the Enclave. The missing character, yeah. as he puts it in the previous episode.
I also had a theory about the head.
Okay, yeah. What's going on with the head?
So is it possible that using the FEV, they almost manufactured their own personal ghoul that's just on a constant drip of not feral serum, whatever it is?
That's her head, the representative's head?
Could be. I mean, they lose...
Well, she doesn't look ghoulified.
Obviously, they lose limbs.
Yeah,
she still has her nose, does she not?
Yeah, she doesn't look ghoulified. She just looks dead.
But Thaddeus still has his nose.
That's true.
So my theory about the head is that she was cryogenically frozen, and that Hank figured out that he needed a human element in the machine code.
Right. And now she became
running her personality construct out of her brain
right
into the chips wirelessly, and basically because she has a feeding tube in, which is weird because she doesn't have a body.
Is there a feeding tube? Let me look at the picture again.
There's a feeding tube going into her mouth.
Right.
Well, I thought it was in her nose.
Was it in her nose? I mean, it may be kind of like an IV rather than something that actually gets digested by your stomach. Could be. Yeah.
But her eyes are pretty much glassed over and have cataracts.
Yeah, she looks way dead.
Yeah, right? It's a very interesting looking thing. And it doesn't look like she's been there for very long.
Mm-hmm. Nova, what do you think?
I have an out there theory.
Sure.
Remember how Hank went to Vault 24 before? So he got the data there. What if she was a resident of Vault 24 and was the because Vault 24 was made specifically to test this device. So what if she was actually in Vault 24 and that's where he got her head?
Maybe.
Could be.
Maybe. But that device was developed by House. And so if Vault 24 was one of House's vaults where he got to run his experiments, why would she be there?
On the outer skirts of the Mojave.
Right. But why would she be there? Because she doesn't work for House. This is the connection part that I'm missing.
I don't know. Well, because the Mojave pretty much goes to the border of California, and she's a California representative. That might have been the closest vault to her house. And so she might have just privately bought a slot in the vault.
Maybe.
And then she decapitated and hooked up to the machine and used to program everyone else there.
Right. It became part of the experiment. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I'm just throwing something else out there because I was thinking about the sequence of events.
Right. So I've got a lot of speculation. There's some holes. I'm sure somebody's going to comment on this episode and be like, oh, you guys missed this piece. And that makes it all make sense. Or we'll find out next week. And we're getting close to the end of the episode here. Before we get to your predictions about what's going to happen in the next episode and how this is going to end, what did you think about the exits, like I guess it's the credit scene where it pulls out and we see the Canadian border with, we actually see T-51 power armor in the scene for the first time. We haven't seen that in the show yet. You can see it like sitting there. And then you have the big 51 is what America started calling Canada, which feels way too, I don't know, real at this point in history. But any thoughts on this? I think it was kind of cool just to see the border as we get to see these little glimpses of places that we don't see very much in the show in the credits. So that's fun. Pumpkin, do you have thoughts about this?
I mean, it's definitely cool. It's fine. Like, it also helps us give some more context to, like, what's happening in Canada, because especially, like, we knew a little bit. Like, again, this entire episode kind of gave us a lot more context to what's happening with Canada than we've gotten throughout all the games.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, that made me happy. Just get, like, when I found out that she was from Canada, I was like, finally, Canada lore.
Canada lore. All right, well, it's time to wrap this up. Here's what I'm gonna do. We're gonna go to everybody. Feel free just to, like, real quickly say, like, this is how you can get a hold of me, and here's a prediction for the way the season's gonna wrap up. And if you don't have a prediction, that's fine, but if you have one, then shouts. It can be as crazy as you want it to be, or maybe, heck, maybe you're gonna nail it on the head. But let me know what your prediction is for how this is gonna wrap it up. I'm just gonna take it in order on the screen. We'll start with Nova. Nova, you've got some theories, probably. I'm feeling you're a good theory guy, right? What do you think?
Oh God, you're making me blush now. So finish the season out. We obviously are going to see the Brotherhood come back with their civil war continuing. They're also going to see the Caesar's Legion continuing their civil war, which, just minor different note, that kind of irks me, is the fact that two factions are having a civil war at the same time, as if the story writers were just,
yeah, yeah,
kind of, well, blanking on ideas.
Let me fill in some gaps here. We see in the trailer for next week that the Legion is on the march. So,
oh, yeah,
I think, yeah, and we haven't seen yet the scene of Macaulay Culkin stabbing somebody. So I think it's very highly implied that that civil war is done. They are now unified under Macaulay Culkin as the new Caesar, and they are now marching to the Strip. I think that's going to play into it. So I won't go on about that, but I think that's going to play into it. So I think you might be onto something there.
Yeah, and so they're probably going to have the Brotherhood's probably going to show up outside of New Vegas, same at the same time that the Legion probably shows up outside of New Vegas. There's going to be a massive battle between both of them, while at the same time, whatever is happening inside of the Lucky 38 with Mr. House and the Ghoul is going to... Oh, gosh. Who? Okay, sorry, a lot of people are texting me randomly. whatever's going on between them is going to culminate with either them agreeing...
Mm-hmm.
With them agreeing to do... With them agreeing because the Ghoul brought the Dio to Mr. House, so Mr. House is going to help the Ghoul, or the Ghoul is just going to kill Mr. House. We really don't know. I hope it's the former, though.
Okay, so I have a theory about Mr. House here. My theory is, to just add on to this a little bit, in the conversation he has with Cooper in the past, he mentions that his plan is to preserve himself, not physically, but by loading his mind into a machine and becoming mechanical, which doesn't coordinate with what happens in New Vegas, because we see that his body is still alive, right? Yeah. So my theory here is that that's not a mistake by the writers. That's House having layers upon layers of backup plans. And he figures out how to maintain his body, which is what we see in the game. And then something happens to his body due to one of the versions of the game endings working out where he doesn't survive. Or something happens in the 15 years between the game and the TV show, and his body's no longer there, but his backup plan is the plan that he told Cooper about, downloading his consciousness into his computers. And that's the version of House that we're seeing here, is that he's no longer physically a person. He's just a machine at this point.
In the backup power that he actually did have within 38 Canoxus to actually run all the systems. So it was waiting for the additional power from the fusion reactor. That makes sense.
Yeah, so I think that all kind of works out together. So there's some thoughts on that, but some cool thoughts. Yeah,
I didn't really think about that. That sounds a pretty good theory.
Cool. All right, Lil Green, thanks for being here. Thumbs up. He's just like, yeah,
there we go. Sorry, good. I'm trying to look for the...
No, you're fine.
Well, real quick, you can find me in the Discord under Lil Green. If you want to see my photography, you can look me up on Instagram, Lil Green_photography. That's where you can find me. I know a handful of you find me, like, every month. Hi, thank you very much. I appreciate the follows. I feel like we're going to be left with a massive cliffhanger that involves Vegas and either... all the factions going to war, not knowing what's going to happen. I feel like that's where they're going to leave us. But
Freeside's going to get stuck in the middle, and
yeah. So instead of the Battle of Hoover Dam, it's the Battle of New Vegas.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Like, with everything that's been going on, like, my little prediction is, like, they're not choosing a canon ending to Fallout New Vegas is because, like, Fallout New Vegas, as we know it, never happened. Fallout 3, as we know it, never happened. I'm still standing by that because the player character was never there. Because the courier became such a legend, he's not mentioned.
Right, right. And they've talked about this, and I mentioned this before. One of the things Todd talked about is, I think it was Todd, or maybe one of the producers of the show, talked about how they didn't want to, and they did this with, like, other games. The other Bethesda games don't fully confirm a specific ending for previous Bethesda Fallouts. They just kind of take certain elements and move forward with them, but they don't do like a full confirmation. And that seems to be what they're doing with the TV show too, is they're kind of doing a like, well, however your version of the events ended, this is a, let's just imagine the courier didn't exist. And this is just kind of the way things worked out in the world. So I think you might be onto something there, because it does seem to be what they're trying to do. And so the more that people try to say, like, well, it's definitely this ending, I don't think that was their intent, even if the evidence points towards it. I'm not sure it was their plan, would be my guess. But yeah, thanks, Lil Green. Let's move on to Pumpkin King. Hey, man, thanks for being here. Oh, you're going to find it. There you go. There's the unmute.
No. Let's just say what you almost said would not have been a good thing to say on Twitch.
Yep. Yeah. Don't reverse your first letters of your.
Don't do that. Yep. But no, you guys know me as the Pumpkin King. You guys can always find me in the Discord. You can find me on Blue Sky. We have the Blue Sky pack in our Discord, in the Robots Radio Discord that you can look through.
Any predictions? God, any thoughts? Anything come to mind that hasn't been brought up yet?
Or
do you want to just confirm? Go ahead.
I do firmly believe that we're going to be getting a huge battle in this last episode. I do think we're going to be seeing we're definitely going to be seeing a lot of just things happen. Like, I feel like we're going to get some really big revelations, and I have a feeling that things are going to start in the end of this season. And we're going to see a lot more go happen in the next season, like that of the result of what happened.
Right, right. It's going to be kind of inconclusive, but leading towards more stuff. Yeah,
we're going to get a lot. I feel like we're going to get a lot of inconclusive results. Right. That's what I'm trying to say.
A few cliffhangers. Yeah.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
I think you're probably right about that. Yeah. Void, thanks for being here. You got stuff to share? Any predictions?
Are we doing our outros or just predictions?
Both. Just say, okay. Hey, I'm Void. This is where you can find me, and this is my show.
So
go.
My prediction, I think that we're gonna see Vault 31's people fall. And I think that Norm now has a love interest.
Interesting. Kind of interesting. Yeah, the girl that he met, I forget her name. Yeah. The girl. Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think we will see the Ghoul and Lucy reunite.
Okay. You don't think? Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I guess the question is, does he end up down in the vault and does he unfreeze his family, or does something get in the way? Because if he goes down there, he'll probably run into Lucy.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Maybe. I think you might be right. I think it seems like they're going to need some sort of conflict or friction or barrier to then build the next season off of, right? Kind of like what Pumpkin was saying. There's going to be some sort of cliffhanger there. Yeah. All right. And how can people get a hold of you and listen to your other show?
Well, hi, my name is Jeremy Geyser. I am the host of the Dungeons and Dipshits, a live play D&D podcast. You can find us once a month at the end of each month. Our 14th episodic episode, well, story episode, is going up this Saturday. In the coming months, we have a very large change coming, that we are all pretty excited for.
Okay. Cool.
To say the least.
Cool. Cool. All right.
Well,
I think if people haven't listened to your show, they should probably at least just listen to the beginning of the show and get into it.
Please listen to me.
Yeah. Go listen to them.
For live stream, you can see my camera zoom in. Give me the ad revenue.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
In all seriousness, we just love having fun with it. It's not about the money at this point.
Yep. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks for being here. Ira, thank you for joining us again. Do you have any theories or speculation to share?
Oh, well, like I said before, that I don't do much, any kind of predictions on anything. I don't like to watch trailers.
Sure, that's fair.
I just want to wait and see what happens. But I guess it's obviously something that we don't expect. And like somebody's on a different side or something, something like this, something shocking, revealing, and also like cliffhanger to have something to wait for from the next season.
Sounds spot on. That sounds like the most likely prediction so far. Yeah. Some of those things. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Do you want to share ways people can get a hold of you?
Well, I'm on the Discord, Ira_Moody.
Awesome.
That's pretty much it. Haven't been active much, but
you're on there. Yep.
I can be.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us again. Brachio Dreamer Ash, thanks for joining us. Also, how can people get a hold of you? And do you have any predictions?
You know, I'm on the Discord, you know, on Brachio Dreamer Ash. I'm happy to discuss. You can always DM me, whatever. Don't really have anything else going on. As for predictions, I think there's just too much going on to get like an accurate or at least semi accurate prediction of what could happen. There's just
a lot of variables. There are a lot of variables.
So much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just look forward to what's going to happen next.
Nice. That's fair enough. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. Adam's Child, do you have any predictions and how can people get a hold of you?
Hello, my name is Adam's Child. You can find me on the Robots Radio Discord at Adam's Child. And you can find me on Instagram at _JT_Sims with 2 M's. My prediction for the ending is, I don't have a big extravaganza ending in mind, but I do look forward to, and I'm also not looking forward to, the reunion of Cooper with his family, because I'm sure his family will not recognize him as a ghoul.
Yeah.
And either it is going to be a horrifying moment, or perhaps they didn't end up making it in time but still got in, so maybe they are also ghoulified and we get a reunion. Ooh. Like we did in Fallout 4 with the ghoulified family.
Oh, and Janie's like a little ghoul. Aww.
Yeah.
Aww. Or she wakes up and goes, ah, and then punches him in the face and runs away. Yeah. A monster.
Yeah. Or he becomes a glowing one.
Ooh, yeah. He's got that. Yeah. The uranium in his stomach. Yeah. I definitely think he's going to be a glowing one next season. That seems like a fun one. All right. Thank you for joining us. And then Remy jumped in too. Welcome. I'm so glad that you're able to make it. And do you have any thoughts or ways people can get a hold of you?
Well, on the Discord, I am simply Remy. Xbox, I play 76 at Remy Riot. As far as my thoughts, I'm thinking something's going to be happening with
we're all on pins and needles here. We're
Lucy, all waiting. Lucy and Hank. Mm-hmm. In the trailer,
we see them talking with each other again, and it doesn't look like Hank is restrained. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Do you think that means something?
I noticed that. I don't remember if she happened to grab his dial. Because he mentioned how when he, depending on the frequency that the dial was turned, it made them more docile. Or it made them remember.
Right. Right. Remember.
So I'm kind of wondering if that gets destroyed.
Or if she turns it the other way and they all remember and things go chaotic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that.
I feel like things might get a little hectic.
Yeah. And add to the chaos, the Legionnaire attack, the Brotherhood will attack. Mm-hmm. There's Deathclaws still, and then everyone's going to riot.
And then, of course, with Ron Perlman in the previous episode, now we know that the super mutants are up and about.
Yes. Yeah, well, I think this is something that's going to be kind of hinted at. But who knows? Maybe super mutants show up at the strip, too. Maybe you're onto something. Super mutants
could show up.
Oh, my gosh.
We could see the official introduction of the Enclave.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, My theory with Cooper's family is that they may not be in their cryopods.
Yes, I think that they didn't show their faces. So I think that this is one of those scenes.
Show their faces.
Yeah, it's kind of like when someone dies and you don't show their dead body, they're probably alive.
One of them could be. Janie could be. Barb may even be in hers. But I feel like Hank may have tinkered with them done something with them before.
Yeah.
Before Lucy showed up.
That'd be a dark twist. Yeah. Interesting. Yep. Oh, you brought some thoughts I hadn't considered. Now we have to think about these things some more. But thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, everybody, for being here. This has been super fun. I will be back next week with a regular episode, finishing the season, summing it up, and kind of clarifying some of the other little details. I obviously have some questions still. I'm sure lots of people do. And so if you have some thoughts on this, join us on the Discord. The spoilers channel on the Discord has been flooded with people like, oh, I think this will happen, or I think this will happen, or I think this will happen. And I've been chiming in too. And I'm like, well, if that happens, then how do you explain this? And what about this thing? And we're all trying to figure it out. So I would love to have everybody's responses and reactions to the way this actually finishes, and who knows, maybe speculations for the next season, because it's already been greenlit. They're obviously going to do it, and the show has been a huge success so far. So thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, chat, for chiming in. Love all the comments and you guys being a part of these patron episodes because we stream them live. And that's going to do it for this week. Thank you, everyone, and we will see you next time. But wait, before you go, No Phil, No Thrill wanted to get some thoughts in. He couldn't make it to the show, so here you go.
I just have to say, wow. Wow. This episode had so many WTF moments. I had to write them down just to know where to start. I first want to say what was a personal highlight for me was that House seems to be alive. When we had the prediction episode in September or August last year, we talked a little bit about this. It seems I was kinda right-ish on that one. Another thing that really had me screaming at 6 o'clock in the morning in Germany in front of my laptop was that Clancy Brown, who was the voice of Paladin Rhombos in the first Fallout, played the president. And Cooper gave the cold fusion to the president. And is he Enclave? I think he has to be Enclave. Then Congresswoman Welsh, the living computer. This was wild. And I think we can now say it's confirmed that Thaddeus is becoming a centaur. I loved the scene with Maximus the Ghoul and Thaddeus. It was so hilarious. It was so funny. When his arm fell off, and he was like, oh, I think I have a medical episode or something like this. It was great. Another what WTF moment was Steph. We have seen where Steph came from, and I think we have seen why she's so hardcore. And this was interesting, I thought, because this added a whole new dimension to her personality, I think. And I'm beginning asking if we might see if she, like, comes around sometimes, maybe if she, like, pivots from... Right now she looks like a pure villain, but maybe she might pivot from that a little bit in the future. It was a lot. It was an amazing episode. I cannot wait for the next episode to drop. What I also liked is, and I mean, it's pretty clear how Hank manipulates Lucy, but you could see in the episode how Lucy also manipulates Hank back, how he used his weakness that he wants to become a family again to get him to tell a lot of the things of his operation and how he does things and how things would have to be done. This was amazing. I really liked the Lucy plot line in this episode.
To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.